Hey guys, it's JB. We would love for you to be a part of the Boundless Show, and that means you gotta tell us what you think. So if you go online and take our survey at boundless.org/survey, you can tell us everything that's working and everything that's not. Thanks so much.
Boundless Show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. This is Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, we have our own Joshua Rogers here to answer a question from a guy who is kind of being bugged by a girl that he can't seem to shake. He wants to let her down easy, but wonders how does he do that and still be kind. You know that Joshua Rogers has advice for him. For our culture segment, JB actually has the privilege of interviewing Margot Starbuck, really on living life in the midst of life's losses and really how to reach out to those who have disabilities. She is really in an interesting living experiment. This is something I've never heard of in her neighborhood. And so this is a fascinating just real life scenario of how we do community well. So JB's got the scoop on that. Well, for our roundtable, I am very excited to welcome our guests here. We have JB, Jason, and Ashley. Hey, guys.
Hey, Lisa. Hey.
Thanks for being here. good times. JB, it's been a while, but you are showed up in a purple shirt, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. That is one of my favorite colors.
Oh, that's really great. Okay, cool. Jason is one of our finishing out one of our internships here at Focus and is sporting a shirt to prove it, so we love that.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And Ashley, of course, she's been on the show before. We just love your insights, Ashley.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Thank you.
So this is going to be a fun discussion because we're going to actually talk about, you know, everyone. I can't tell you how many times when I speak places, young adults come up to me and they're like, Lisa, I just need to talk to you about my calling. Or they think they have a calling, but they're not living it out yet. Or they don't know their calling, or they're afraid that they're out of the will of God because they're doing something else, you know. So it can get like crazy making, I think. And I definitely walked that road myself because my 20s were just a hot mess. I was all over the place. I was trying to figure out what I was doing. I moved all over the country. I lived with my parents for a fair share of time, and that was good and bad. So we're going to talk about what it feels like to wrestle with this idea of, you know, are you in what you're going to be doing now at this point? Have you chosen something? I mean, I think when it comes down to people who take on graduate degrees, I mean, if you're going to be a surgeon, I don't know of many people that are like, I'm going to be a surgeon for 3 to 4 years and then I'm going to reevaluate and look at, you know, obviously some things are kind of prescriptive for where you land. So this is going to be a fun conversation. Very glad you guys are going to be part of it. And so the first thing I want to ask is where, if you had to put yourself on a timeline of kind of where you are, you know, in light of maybe looking back in high school or whatever, what you thought you'd be doing. If you put yourself in a timeline of your expectations and where you are right now, what section of your story are you living out? Are you kind of hitting a stride, or are you like, I'm wondering where I'm settling in or if I'm going to grow in this or what? How would you assess?
I feel like for me, I'm kind of at a point where I'm settling in. Mm-hmm. But I definitely have been in the past at a point where I was wrestling with my calling.
Yeah.
Growing up, I always wanted to be either a missionary or a writer or a spy.
Wow.
And obviously,
now you're all three.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Working here.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. But after, so I went to school and I studied writing and minored in missions. And then after school, I started working at a marketing company and just kind of felt like, well, I've had this burden my whole life to do missions and writing, and I'm not doing either one. And just kind of questioning, like, okay, is this, maybe I was wrong about that burden, or maybe that wasn't from God. And just wrestling through that and struggling with that. But now I feel like I'm at a place where I have kind of come over that hump. Mm-hmm. And wrestled through that. And I'm working at a ministry, using my passions with writing. So kind of settling in, which
yeah.
is really nice.
Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jason?
Yeah, right now I'm more in the process of kind of channeling all my options. I think it's kind of ironic when you get out of high school, you have so many options, which is great, but it's also kind of scary at the same time because you have so many different things you could do. So mm-hmm. I have 1 year left of college, and so I'm just really trying to kind of hone in on a certain direction. This internship has definitely been beneficial because I feel like with the counseling department here, looking at certain grad schools and maybe what specialties I want to have, and you know, how I'm going to work all that out. So I'm kind of just in the process of narrowing my options and deciding specifically, you know, what school to go to next and kind of just what my next steps are and what I want to do for at least this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's very interesting because you were just telling us before we started taping that you're actually going to take a little diversion to do something different.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be taking a whole semester off to go to Florida. I'm going to do the Disney College Program. Very exciting opportunity. Has nothing really to do with my major or what I want to do for the rest
but
of my life.
Disney.
But I mean, I got in and how could you say no? It's working for Disney. You can play in the parks anytime you're not working. So
yeah,
I just feel like I couldn't say no to that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, JB.
So I feel like right now I'm hitting my stride in a sense because back when I graduated from college about 6 years ago, my dream was to move to Colorado Springs and work for Focus on the Family. And
wow.
I feel like that was something God laid in my heart at a time when it wouldn't have really worked out. And I think there was a good reason for that. You know, I had a lot of growing up to do. And even though I had been through college, you know, we all kind of have that syndrome where we go to college our first year and we're like, yeah, I know everything and all that stuff. And it was easy for me to think that. But, you know, I still had so much, you know, spiritual growth and, you know, personal and emotional growth to go through. And in the years that followed, I went to work at a Walmart, which was not exactly where I imagined myself to be after college. But I got to say, you know, you can glorify God even at a Walmart. And there were a lot of lessons to learn there. And eventually, you know, I was able to move on and up, and I eventually landed a position here, which has been a real big blessing. And it's really in the field that I wanted to be in, which is online marketing. And that's been really neat. So I'm just totally open right now to see where God leads at this point. Cause you know, he hasn't let me down ever. And you know, even when things don't look like they're going to lead somewhere, they do lead to something that's ultimately for his glory and you know, for my own growth and as far as that goes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because one of the ideas for this conversation came out of a TED Talk by Emily Wapnick, who actually, in her talk, argued why some of us don't have one true calling. And I think that's probably extremely encouraging for millennials who like the idea of keeping your options open and kind of being able to kind of wiggle here or there or try something totally new or drop something and be like, no, this isn't me. I can start over again. Whereas like our grandparents and even our parents to some extent kind of stuck with that company and earned their little pins and kind of worked their way through and got the retirement package. And so it's kind of this like, you know, legitimizing this feeling of, okay, maybe I can switch gears mid-range. And I actually did that because I, not expectedly, I started out in journalism and I wrote a lot and I edited, was at a magazine for a while and then kind of shimmied into the world of PR. And then it was really just through what I would say, you know, echoing JB, God actually telling me to walk through a couple doors that I ended up in Boundless and in the realm of podcasting and running a website, which not totally sure I even know how to do that yet. But but it was weird because I never would have at 22 said this is exactly what I'm going to do. But I think it's almost a little more exciting when you don't see it coming, because I think had I known the different changes I'd go through, I would have been like a big freak, you know, I would have freaked out. So all that to say, do you see yourself as kind of a, not that you can see the future, but do you see yourself as kind of a one career person, like that thing that you know you're good at, the thing that you know you can grow in, you're kind of going to move on this track? I mean, I know, you know, attorneys, accountants, like people just know where their niche is and they just kind of move into it. Or do you see yourself as, I'm kind of that, you know, Thomas More, man for all seasons, jack of all trades. I feel like my skills can be used in a number of different places and I'm just open. What do you feel you are personality-wise or track-wise on that?
Well, even though I just said that I always knew that I wanted to be a missionary or a writer, I also have a lot of passions. I'm one of those people that I really could do anything. Like when I was walking through that season of doubt about my calling, I literally applied for so many random jobs. I applied to be a Girl Scout leader in New Hampshire, and I applied to work at a newspaper in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
And then I applied for law school, and I just thought, oh, you know, the world is my oyster. Maybe I could just try something totally different. And really love that. So yeah, I definitely am open to trying new things, but I do think that I always kind of gravitate towards missional work or things with writing, mm-hmm. Because I feel like that those are areas that God has especially put a deeper level of passion on my heart. Mm-hmm. But I could see myself doing a lot of other things too. So mm-hmm. I don't know what the future will hold.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, it's interesting because I felt like when I was in my pursuing a college major and all that, I was almost kind of jealous of people who had that, oh my goodness, this is what I'm going to be for the rest of my life. And they've always known that because I felt like I wasn't necessarily gifted with that. I didn't really know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what I've learned, though, is that it's okay not to know. It's okay to keep your options open. And I think for me, I definitely have a lot of different areas where I could see myself going and excelling in. And I think as a Christian, it's cool to know that no matter what I do, I can do it for the glory of God. And I don't have to go into just one particular thing. It doesn't even necessarily have to be ministry or nonprofit focused. It can be. Mm-hmm. But there's just... as long as my heart is to give my best, I think God's given me qualities that can be used in a lot of different fields. So I'm excited to see where God takes me on that. And it's always comforting to know after watching that TED Talk that it's not, you don't have to be one thing your whole life. It's not like, it's not like it's a failure if you pursue something and then move on to something else.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So I feel like I've struggled a lot with swinging back and forth on this pendulum when it comes to this sort of stuff, because when I was in college, I felt like that sense of, you know, openness when it came to all kinds of things I could get involved with. And up to that point, everything I did, you know, I tried to do a very good job at it. So, you know, my thought was, well, if I can do it and if I can do a very good job with it, therefore, there's nothing really stopping me from doing 7 different things and doing them well or something like that. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, there are a lot of unseen things like relationships and, you know, emotional types of issues that I suffered in just because I wasn't really giving much attention to those things. So for a while, you know, I didn't really have any focus in my life. You know, I just thought, well, if I can do this, then, well, that's great. We'll do that. So eventually I had a bit of a, you know, rock bottom moment in college where I finally had to wrestle with the idea that, yes, I do need to actually start thinking about, okay, what's the area in which God wants me to focus right now? Mm-hmm. And that may not be the area that I need to focus on forever, but at least it's something that, you know, I know He wants me to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that means giving up, you know, X, Y, and Z, then so be it. But, you know, at least I know that, you know, I'm actually trying to seek His heart in that and not just do things just because I'm getting a kick out of it or something like that.
Yeah.
I do feel like even though there are so many options, there is something to be said for being committed to something, even if it's not your big dream or you're not changing the world. Because I feel like growing up as a millennial, I was told like, oh, you can do anything you want to do and be anything you want and you can change the world. But not everybody is supposed to change the world. And the people that do, it's not like they do it right when they first graduate from college or, you know, it's their whole life is something great. A lot of times that's just somebody who's been faithful and what they were given, and then God took that and used it as an opportunity to change a circumstance or a situation. So I think that's one thing about calling is that sometimes we are called to great things, but sometimes we're called to faithfulness in being in the background and in work that's hard that we don't enjoy.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and it's interesting because JB, you mentioned, you know, online marketing, like, you know, I don't know many 5 or 6 year olds who are like, someday I want to be an online marketer. But a year from now, online marketing is not going to be online marketing as we know it. So you're in a very transitional, a very fluid kind of field. Like all these people that are like, my job centers around social media. Well, like 8 years ago, that didn't even exist, you know, hardly. Certainly as a job, pretty much. So that's why I think it's fascinating the amount of opportunity that there is to kind of craft, take skills that you have and craft a job out of it. As you guys look at where you are now and kind of where you want to be or just things you want to try, what are ways that you're ensuring that you're growing? How do you do development? How do you make sure that you're keeping options open while still remaining committed, but being, you know, kind of that I want to grow and develop and be better at what I do or learn new things?
I think one thing that's really key is surrounding yourself with a lot of diverse friend groups. Making sure that I think it's easy, especially for me, to just spend time with people that are very similar to me, which is okay. But I think that I found going to college, it really opened my eyes because it was so big that there's so many different types of people and so many different passions. And so I think I was around people that were different than me. And at first it was kind of weird. And then I realized like, oh, well, I kind of like some of the things these guys like too, you know? And so just I think who you spend your time with definitely dictates a lot of what you're passionate about, because you kind of, it kind of rubs off a little bit. You become passionate and you learn more things about the friends that you have.
So. When I was growing up, my dad always encouraged me to, as he put it, add tools to my toolbox. And, you know, he was one of those people who always believed, you know, if you're skilled at a lot of different things, at least you'll be wanted to some degree. Mm-hmm. You know, even if, you know, the world may change in some regard and you may, you know, find yourself in this situation where you didn't expect the trend of, you know, the marketplace to be A or B, at least you got this, you know, by your side. Mm-hmm. So that really helped a lot growing up. Mm-hmm. Another thing was, you know, just finding people in my life who are holding me accountable as far as learning things. So, you know, I've been really blessed to have a lot of supervisors and superiors who have really asked me to, you know, push myself as far as finding, you know, materials and resources that I could learn from and develop my skill set with.
I think too, trying new things, being willing mm-hmm. to step out of your comfort zone and like take a turn leading the meeting or read a new book about your craft and learn something new that way, or even being around people that are smarter than you or better at your job than you is really good, even though it's kind of humbling and you like to be kind of in the know. But when you're around other people who are smarter than you, they teach you things. And mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to keep growing.
Mm-hmm. Can you guys describe a time where maybe you questioned your calling in a sense? And what did you do to get unstuck? Because I know, I mean, I think you feel like growing up in church, mm-hmm. you're kind of talking about the will of God and mm-hmm. what if God, you know, what if we're out of God's will or whatever? I think it can kind of get us all nervous. But I know, I mean, there were many times where I was like, this is not where I thought I'd be. And just kind of keeping moving, taking that next step helped, even though it was something, it might have been a temp job, it might have been another move that I didn't know what I was doing, it might have been, but just feeling like I had some momentum helped rather than sitting on my hands. I don't know, what's an example for you guys of something that helped when you felt like, oh, I feel like I'm getting derailed here and mm-hmm. I need to, you know, check myself?
Well, back when I was in late high school, I had a bit of a phase where I was really, really jazzed about pursuing a career in piano performance or education. Hmm. I really, really liked playing the piano a lot, and I grew up doing that. And there came a point where I was just very kind of a little bit jaded when I started to see a lot of my older friends going into college and locking themselves in practice rooms for 4 hours a day. And mm-hmm. by the way, if you're listening to this and that's you, I totally look up to that because I could never do it. You know, I saw it and I'm like, wow, my meager 30 minutes to an hour a day is just not going to cut it here. Mm-hmm. And I really need to start rethinking things. And even my parents were noticing that as well. And they were starting to ask me, you know, is this really what you want to do? And I started thinking about, and thankfully with their help and guidance, I started thinking back to my past. And there was an experience from when I was about 9 years old in which my family and I were at Disney World on vacation. And they had those fan things that squirted water,
oh, yeah.
you know, in the summer so that you could keep yourself cool and all that. And they called them like the squeeze breeze or something like that. And we were at a bus stop one night, and I remember to pass the time and to relieve the boredom, I just totally went on this big sales pitch in front of everybody talking about how great the squeeze breeze was, like some infomercial and everything. and they were just staring at me going, what just happened there? That was really weird. But, you know, it was just little things like that that made them, you know, encourage me to start thinking, hey, what about marketing? You know, mm-hmm. you love talking to people about things and teaching them things and all that. And that really helped me get back on track, especially since, you know, I'd kind of grown up with this notion, getting back to a point that you made, Lisa, about the will of God. I always felt afraid that I'd be stepping outside the will of God. And in the years that followed, you know, I started to realize that the will of God is not something to be afraid of. Like, there's this one point that we have to stand on or else we're just going to, you know, totally get zapped or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an obedient attitude that is more like a circle in which, you know, if you're in within the boundaries, then you're within the will of God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are all kinds of things that we could do that are within the will of God, you know, when we have the right attitude and the right spirit. And that's something I had to recognize, and that was very freeing in the years that followed when I didn't end up where I thought I'd be. And, you know, it took a while for, you know, certain things to fall into place.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that a lot. I feel like I used to be afraid too, that if I made the wrong decision, then I would be outside of God's will, and then I would mess up all the stuff. Like, what if I took the wrong job, and then I met the wrong people, and then I didn't get married, and then it just seemed like, you know, an avalanche effect.
Now that's my story.
But I was talking to my pastor about that, and he gave me a really great analogy. And he has five kids. And he was saying, you know, if my kids got up one morning and made me breakfast and then accidentally burned down the kitchen, I wouldn't be angry that they burned down the kitchen. I'd be like, I mean, yeah, I'd be a little upset, but it would be more about, okay, you guys were trying to do something thoughtful for me, and I care more about your safety and your health and that you're okay than the house. And it's kind of the same thing with God, that sometimes we try to do something for God, and even if we mess up, that he's not going to be angry with us. He still appreciates the effort that we put in, but like, and he cares about what our own personal health and stuff. So we can't really mess it up.
I think it's weird how similar my story is. I was in college and becoming dissatisfied with my major. I was doing business at the time, and it just did not seem like I was really enjoying it a whole lot. But I worried about changing my major because I was like, oh my goodness, it's going to be this butterfly effect. And what if I change the will of God, you know? And so I went to my pastor, and he gave me an incredible book. I read it in like 2 days. Because it was like, it was just so refreshing. And the whole point of it was that, you know, God's will is our sanctification. And God can do that a lot of different ways. And we can maybe choose different colleges, and that's okay. We can maybe go different majors, and that's okay. God cares about our heart, and he cares about our growth. And so there's lots of different ways that God can accomplish that. And so it kind of like the others... here today, I felt so free because I really just focused more on getting good counsel, you know, asking people, what is it that I'm good at? And, you know, taking those little job inventory tests, you know, all those kind of things. But it's okay to do that and find out what you're good at and know that ultimately, if you have the right heart and the right intentions, God is going to use that. He's promised us in his word that if we have the right heart, he's going to work on us, and he's going to allow us to grow and impact others.
Do you remember what that book was called?
Yeah, it was called Just Do Something by, I think, Kevin DeYoung.
That's a good one.
We love that book here at The Boundless Show. That's awesome. Well, you guys, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing kind of from your own stories and encouraging folks, because I think a lot of people, whether you are starting out or whether you're mid-career and you feel like you're in a slump, or whether you just feel like you need a change or you're looking for work, I think it's easy to listen to Satan's lies. And so to remember that God is with us. He is directing us. He has got our back. And like JB said, you know, he's just looking for our heart and for our obedience, and how we do that, I think, is just, you know, that's just icing. I mean, that's his decision for how he's going to direct us in that path. So thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much. Both the beautiful and broken chords are ringing out in a world of noise. But hope is played.
And I hear a song, play on and down.
right, guys, for today's culture segment, we have Margot Starbuck, author of The Girl in the Orange Dress. And I am super excited to have Margot with us. Welcome.
Thank you, JB.
Yes. So Margot and I have exchanged probably hundreds of emails, and I've read dozens of her pieces, and I'm a huge fan. And so meeting you in person is kind of like, I'm a little starstruck and nervous. So if I stumble, you just let me know. Give me some grace and we'll keep going.
We'll do.
So one of my favorite things that you do, and for today's Christian woman, you're like regular columnist, and you had a column that was Live Love, which is kind of this amazing like life motto that I want tattooed somewhere on my body at this point, because it's just, I mean, it's perfect. It's like the embodiment of what we're supposed to do, mm-hmm. you know? And so like, how did you come to that point where that was something that you kind of wanted to centralize your message on?
As I think about what matters most, it's tempting to believe that it's what we think, it's what we say. And I really do think when I look at the life of Jesus, it's about what we do, how we engage with other people, and live love. I actually have it on bracelets, which I can send you.
Right. Is not a tattoo, just, but it'll do.
It's the way that I want to be living in the world.
Yeah. And so what would you find, like, I think that hearing something like that, I'm like, yes, that is so great and it's so noble. So what does it look like? Like, practically, what kind of things did you have to overcome in order to get to a point where you felt like you were living love well?
Oh, I love that you think I am living it well. I don't know that I am. You know what? I am naturally introverted.
And really?
So for me, in front of my laptop all day really is my happy place. And so for me to live love, it certainly involves getting out of my house. And that's the win. When I do get out, when I'm with my neighbors, when I take risks, you know, it is a little scary to move toward other people. But I would say that when I do, a lot of times that's when I end up meeting Jesus, yeah. is in others.
Okay, so Margot, can you tell us a little bit about your childhood? And I know that it was kind of rough for you. And so what were some of the things that kind of went on that you've had to sort through in all of this?
Mm-hmm. I was relinquished for adoption and adopted into a home with alcoholism, violence. My parents divorced when I was 6. They remarried. Those marriages to other people ended by the time I was 15. And so I think what I learned, again, not consciously, but in my deep places, was that I wasn't worth showing up for. I wasn't worth sticking around for. I wasn't worth loving. And I don't think, a few years ago, I got together with my first grade teacher. And first grade teacher said, you know, we all thought you were doing, you know, so well, so fabulously. And on the outside, that's the way it looked. It's like I had built this shell around my heart of protection to keep from getting hurt again. And that shell stayed intact until my young adult years.
And I think it, like, that kind of performative facade of, like, you know, I'm not going to let you know me and love me, but I'm going to perform well enough that you're impressed as a teacher and I have your approval and all of these things. It's so easy to fall into. And it's really frustrating to try and break out of, I think, of like, I'm actually going to show you myself and make myself vulnerable to you and risk being hurt and rejected again.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people that, you know, who are doing, like myself, doing really well with the shell, something happens in our lives that becomes an opportunity for us to look at it. So the year that I graduated from college, my roommate who was single became pregnant. And all of a sudden, like, what is she going to do with this child? Is she going to relinquish him like I was relinquished, or is she going to keep him? And when she kept him, that was like the first little crack in that armor around my heart. Mm-hmm. And living with him and, you know, holding this precious little guy was like 500 more cracks in that armor I had worked so hard to hold together. And so I would say that his arrival really was the beginning of that, that... I think of the picture of a Tootsie Pop and like all the like licks and cracks. And that was, it was hard, but that was God's good work in my life, was giving that shell a licking.
Yeah. And was there a time then when the shell just like totally fell apart? Like there was no way that you could maintain that anymore?
Oh, wow. Boy, there were, I would just say there were a series of moments when, it was, and one of them was prayer. I went to a healing prayer conference and, wonderful woman prayed for me. That was maybe, one little piece falling off. And then when I did have kids, seeing my daughter sleeping in her bed, like so safely, that was another one. Mm-hmm. And I even think that, that marriage was one. I get married and here's the person who's going to stick around, who's going to be there, who's contractually obligated, even though, a lot of parents didn't stick around, this person will be there. Mm-hmm. And that was an opportunity, to go a little deeper and look into my heart. So I think we can look at a lot of the things that happen in our lives as opportunities mm-hmm. to do that God gives us to be with us in that work.
And I wish that like every story where someone experienced rejection growing up or abandonment growing up, that was like the end of it and they just could spend their whole life healing from that. But that's not always the case. And that wasn't the case for you. And so maybe how did experiencing rejection in your adult life and that same maybe sense of abandonment, how did that affect you? And what did that look like in your marriage? And how do you recover from something like that?
Yeah, I'll say about three or four years ago, my husband did leave. And as I sort of wrestled with God, I'm like, really, God? I feel like we've been through this when we've mm-hmm. done this. And you've ministered to my heart. And I've shared, the good news that you're with us and for us. Are we really doing this again? Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a little bit of the prophet Hosea, who whose story, marrying a prostitute, having a child called, not mine, not beloved. His message that God gave him was so closely intertwined with his living. And I'm like, all right, God, in this moment, all I can do is choose for the truth of you being with me and for me. And yet, believe me, it wasn't easy. That little voice in my head was, and this is awful, I hate to even say it loud, but like, you are worthless garbage to be discarded. And that's one that I hung on to mm-hmm. for a couple of years, and it was killing me. And God, sort of took that graciously, took that from me so I could live into the story that is most real and most true.
Yeah. Is singleness something that you struggle with now, or is it something that you've kind of like have dealt with and made your peace with and you're doing it, or maybe you're dating? I don't know. Margo?
I'll say I'm not dating. And right at this moment, I feel like I have this life that I'm so grateful for mm-hmm. That does include three teenagers. And so
it's a little full.
It is full. So at this moment, I'm really okay with it. And we'll see, sort of what happens now. But just really grateful in this moment for the life that I have.
And I love that. And I love that, like, while there are some of us who struggle a lot with our singleness, that there is a peace that can come, and like, maybe I won't ever have that because mm-hmm. I really want to be married. But there are people who are in that place of like total contentment of like, my life is really full and God has filled all of those cracks. I'm not wanting.
Yeah, I want to jump in because I just did have a thought. I will say, 2 weekends ago, I was looking for a friend to go swimming with in the river. Swimming is my favorite thing. And I asked 11 humans and nobody could do it. Everybody said no. And that's where that narrative starts to come back, right? And I'm thinking, I'm thinking of my friends who have been single for 40 years, 50 years. Wait, why didn't they tell me? Why didn't they tell me how hard it is? So I am both grateful for my life, but I have those moments and I'm like, wow, this is really hard. Because I mentioned being an introvert. I feel like in asking 11 people, like, I went out there, like, I'm doing the
made
work.
Made myself vulnerable.
Yeah, God, I feel like you should honor the work that I'm doing. And so I would say, yeah, there have been those harder moments when my friends who are married are with their spouses, with their kids. But I remember being married and being so delighted when single friends would show up at our door or want to do something with me. And I have to remind myself, oh, gosh, it's not an imposition. Like, my married friends would love to hang out with me. They'd love to go swimming without their children. So I think that's another sort of, battle that can happen in our minds. And, the reality is that that sometimes it's lonely, but that God does have friends for us.
Yeah. Praise the Lord.
Amen.
So one of my favorite parts of your story is this neighborhood that you live in, North City?
North Street neighborhood.
North Street neighborhood. So mm-hmm. can you tell us what this neighborhood is and how you ended up in this awesome opportunity?
It is my pleasure. I was a part of Reality Ministries in Durham, North Carolina, and a bunch of families began to gather and pray and say, what would it look like, especially for our young adult children with disabilities, if we were to sort of live together in proximity in a place where our young adults could catch a bus, where they could volunteer, where they could walk to a job. And God was just so gracious to us. And we now live in a downtown neighborhood of Durham. It's about two city blocks. These used to be quadruplex apartment buildings, and now they're duplexes, triplexes. And we are living life together. And it feels to me like a taste of the kingdom. It's just a lot of joy.
It's amazing. You can go online. Do you know the website?
Oh, I sure do. It's not too classy, but it's northstreetneighborhood.weebly.com.
And so if you go on there, you can watch these videos of the way that they've like really embraced people with disabilities and haven't like put them off into their own little area, into a home or something like that, you know, and instead it's like we are integrating our lives together because that's what the intention was, you know. And it's so beautiful because I think that especially in the church, for whatever reason, we've really put people with disabilities on the fringes, you know, and it's something so other and it's something so kind of scary and weird and it makes us uncomfortable. And so I guess like how were you ever in that place where it was like, this is really foreign to me and I don't feel good here and this is, I don't know how to interact, you know, and how did you kind of get over that in order to be in this place?
Yeah, I'm sure this is a thread that has been woven into all of my journey, but I've certainly been in those places. I was a spiritual director for a community of an organization supporting people with disabilities, and I've said the wrong stuff. I was just meeting a new friend, Greg, and somebody was pushing his wheelchair, and I was speaking to her instead of to Greg. And so, you know, there have definitely been those learning opportunities along the way, but it has been such a place of life for me, whether it was coaching Special Olympics or you know, running worship services or now being neighbors. It has been just a huge blessing in my life.
So what are things that for someone who maybe haven't had any kind of exposure apart from like awkward run-ins and they're still in that awkward phase, like what kind of advice, I guess, would you give for some? I mean, and I feel like that, like I know that I should love you and I don't know what that looks like. And I'm just, you know, like it's definitely not a natural fit, you know. And so how can I better interact with people in that community?
I feel like the win is in knowing someone personally. And I think as, you know, as listeners think about their experience, there is someone at church, if not at my church, a family member of someone I go to church with or in my neighborhood. And it really can be as simple as, hey, can we grab a Coke together? Or, you know, I'd love to bring some cookies over to your house, get to know you a little bit. And I think you might just be surprised and delighted at what that experience is like. So yeah, it sort of feels like a process of, you know, so often it's tempting for us to see someone as other, and then as we get to know them, we find out, they're just like me, or wow, they're a lot cooler than me.
Right. Like that exposure and like kind of leaning into the discomfort yields like a pretty fruitful relationship in the end, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So maybe what were some of those things that you've personally had to kind of like just dig in and work through, like introspectively, in order to get to a healthy enough place to accept other people's opinions and live with people with disabilities and all of these things that you are kind of leaning into now?
Yeah. You mentioned The Girl in the Orange Dress, which is my memoir about being relinquished for adoption as an infant, growing up in a little bit of a bumpy home, and meeting my birth parents as a young adult. And I don't know that I would have chosen to do all of that growing, but it was thrust upon me. I guess I could have chosen not to look at it. But in my, you know, early mid-20s, I had to look at what I had sort of shut away, right? I'd sort of navigated it all with a happy smile on my face and did need the courage to look at that and work through it and work with a counselor. And I would say that that helped me sort of shift my mind, is that I began to see that I was worth loving and that God was with me and for me, then that's going to change how I relate to everybody else. And that business about being worth loving, that's what I see so often in my friends with disabilities. We just had a big talent show. Over 1,000 people came. They just keep coming and coming, more and more people every year for this talent show where our friends with disabilities shine. And I say, what on earth is happening here? Because next year we're going to have to rent out a venue, you know, that can see 3,000, 5,000. What is going on here? And what's going on here is I see Janie singing on stage or Sloan performing or somebody else dancing. And I swear, the crowd goes crazy and wild. And as I'm sitting in the audience, what I learn is if they're worth loving and celebrating, which they obviously are, maybe I'm worth loving too. And I feel like we need to see that in order to let it sink down into our bones. And that's one of the great gifts I've received from a number of my friends with disabilities. It's just that they receive me as I am and not as I should be.
Right. And so that process, though, I mean, it's incredibly difficult. Like, even if I'm just like reading my Bible every day, like it's really easy not to kind of dig in and do that soul work. Did you have to work through that feeling of like not feeling accepted? And not just because of like maybe rejection issues, but also I know that you're a single mom at this point and you've gone through a lot in your life where it's just like, I just wonder what kind of emotions you've had to kind of work through with that.
Yeah. And as I think back, I have had these experiences of a lot of people leaving and that naughty deceiver's enemy voice says, you're not worth loving. And I return to the moment when I heard God so clearly say, I am with you and for you. And that's a message that I've been sharing with women for the last, 10 or 15 years. And then my husband leaves and the enemy says, what about now? And I think in all different ways, God says to us, okay, not God, the enemy says, what about now? What about now? And I think we have to hang on to that moment of truth, to the truth that God is speaking to our hearts. I am worth loving. And just be tenacious about that because you know what? Our experiences do lie about our value and our worth and our belovedness to the Father.
I love that. And I think, especially as a single woman, I think that like, almost like having that as a mantra, you know, in like the moments of doubt and insecurity and like I go on another date and I still don't get a phone call, you know, and like just saying like I am worth loving and I am deeply loved by the Father and other people, you know, and that there's nothing shameful about someone else like choosing not to marry me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And I want to say that's not like a pep talk with no substance.
Yeah.
That is choosing for what is most real. And so we have to say that reality is more true than this other business that's happening outside of me.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard to not take other people's actions as a reflection of value, you know, like whether it's your parents and, you know, you have rejection issues there, or even I've had people who now have children, you know, like a friend of mine's a single mom. And she said that she has to like constantly remind herself that like her child's reaction to her, whether he's pushing away or like, you know, being sassy or whatever it is that day, that's not a reflection of like her value and her worth and all of these things. And just kind of telling yourself that because it's true and because there's so much that attests to that, you know, and like the Lord's love for us. And and even circling back, I think that that's what enables you to live love, you know, is to make that choice out of that place of like, I have worth and you have worth. And it's worth like doing the hard work of loving you and learning what that looks like.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought it full circle, because in some of my lowest points, the temptation is, woe is me, to think about myself, to dwell on myself. And in some of those moments, the very best thing to do was to get out. And I'm not saying you have to be Mother Teresa, but if you can, in those moments, be for others, find a way to be for others. I find that to be so life-giving when things didn't seem so great for me, but knowing this is what I was made for and God's with me in this.
I love it. I love it. Margot, thank you so much for coming on. If you guys liked hearing from Margot and you want to hear more about her, you can check out her book, The Girl in the Orange Dress. We are actually offering it today. So if you go on the podcast page, you'll see a link to it. Click on it. And then for a gift of any amount, it is yours. So we would love for you to all check out Margot, hear more about her amazing story, and make sure that you check out North Street Neighborhood. You're going to love the videos and learn a whole lot.
Thanks, JB.
Thanks, Margot.
Hey everyone, we are finishing out the show with our inbox, and I have got our fabulous Joshua Rogers here. Hey, Joshua.
Hey there.
All right, well, we've got a question today from a guy who basically is having a frustration with a girl that likes him, but he can't reciprocate her feelings. So let me tell you what it's about. He says, I'd like to know what I should do with a girl that likes me. I can't reciprocate her feelings. I've searched my heart for 2 weeks, hung out in person with her, and have talked to our pastor, who knows us both as we're in the same church. And I still find myself not attracted to her in a way that I know a guy should be to honor God to pursue a relationship. I've prayed about it and asked God for wisdom, and he has given me awesome guidance about whether or not I should try a relationship with her, and the answer is no. So I find myself in a position where she wants to be friends and wants to talk every day and so on. However, I just find her conversations taxing and her friendship a burden because we do not agree on most things and do not have similar interests. But since she likes me, she forces a conversation and demands my opinion on things to maintain the conversation. To be frank, she annoys me, and if I didn't want to know the godly way to handle this, I would simply block her, and that would be that. But I'd like to know the best way to handle this situation.
Oh, Lisa. I got to be honest. This one kind of gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
Because I'm hearing three things out of this question. Number one, this guy's not attracted to her. Number two, he has sought counsel and the will of God and gotten clarity he doesn't belong with her. Mm-hmm. And number three, she wants to be friends and talk all the time, but he doesn't even want to be around her. Mm-hmm. So if he's still hanging out with her, here's the thing. He's got major boundary issues.
Mm-hmm.
Why? First of all, he doesn't know how to say no. Nobody's holding a gun to this guy's head saying that he has to take phone calls from her. Nobody's making him hang out with her and pretend to be her friend, which is what he's doing. And that's dishonest, by the way. Number two, he is not taking responsibility for his own feelings. Instead, he's taking responsibility for hers, which is really unhealthy. He can't control if she feels rejected by his desire to pull away. He has control over himself and the way he communicates his feelings. He needs to own it. The next thing is, his tendency toward being a people pleaser is actually taking precedence over the work of the Holy Spirit in his life. This is the most startling of all. He actually believes God himself is directing him away from this relationship. And that's not enough to make him put up boundaries. If that is truly the case, he's really unhealthy, and I'm willing to bet this is a bigger problem in his life and that it's happening in a lot of relationships that do not honor God. And I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but seriously, if you've gotten some wisdom from the Lord and you're like, oh, well, God, anyway, I've got some insecurity about this and I can't put boundaries up, so, you know, I'm just going to do something else. That's what we call sin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let's make something clear. This guy is not some victim. He sounds like she's doing this to me. Look, she has actually been brave enough to talk about her feelings. And even though he's not interested, he keeps spending all this time with her anyway. So her confusion is actually hardly her fault. And he can call it being a friend to her if he wants, but he's actually just stringing her along by hanging out with her after deciding he has no interest in her. And I'm not just talking about no romantic interest. He doesn't even want to be her friend, and mm-hmm. he's still stringing her along.
Mm-hmm.
One way or the other, friendship, romance. So here's what he's got to do. Number one, he needs to talk to God, and he needs to talk to her. He needs to apologize for God for shrugging off the wisdom God gave him and commit to do the right thing. Then he needs to get online and do some research about healthy conflict management and figure out the best way to walk through this. And after that, have a long-needed conversation. It is not going to be easy, but both of them will be healthier because of it.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that's what I was going to say is it sounds like he's trying to very passively reject her, but I think he has this feeling of like, well, she's a sister in Christ, we're in the same church, so how do I do it with finality but still kindly? Do you have any tips for him on that front?
Well, the thing is, he's just got to recognize he's being unkind.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that he can do is just say, sit down and let her speak her mind. What is this relationship like for you? I said, how do you see this? You know, where do you see this going?
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that with genuine curiosity, he may find out some things he doesn't want to hear. Like, I'm hoping that one day you'll actually see that I'm the right one for you. And then he'll see how much damage he's actually done and will have to take ownership of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like he also may need to say very specific things. If she hasn't gotten hints, I mean, he may need to say, I need you to not text me. I need you to not call me. I need you, you know, stuff that she may not be assuming otherwise. So those are good points. So, Joshua, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. Also, you can go to our inbox section and find past questions that you might be able to search and share with friends as well. Well, we appreciate Joshua Rogers answering this. You can find out more about him at joshuarogers.com. And until next week, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.